morning. Okay. Today, we set out. Maybe if I could trouble somebody to open the window over there, wouldn't be a bad idea. Today we are going to be finishing the sixth section here, again according to this division. And Mir Tashem, next week we will do the seventh, which is on a different direction, and that will be, God willing, next week, whatever, next time we'll go, we'll do the seventh, which is the Siyum of the first Be'er, which is the Siyum of the first well. Great week for donuts. Just kidding. Okay. So let's meanwhile look at the this closing statement that the Maharal has on this section, these past two sections where he's been talking about machlokas, about difference of opinion. And remember, he was specifically very focused on the text which spoke about the argument between Meshami and Beis Hillel. The many years that they had this irresolvable, irreconcilable argument until the heavenly voice came out and said, "Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim." Now, the Maharal had said, we did not dwell on this tremendously, but the Maharal had said part of the Maharal's understanding of "Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim" here was very interesting and, in a certain sense, unusual. We talked about the idea that within machlokes, what happens is that things that exist in the world are not monolithic, they're not straight. Everything has within it a complexity, a harkova, a taruvus, a mixture of bad and good. Remember, we talked about how there's such a thing as an aveira lishma, a mitzvah shaloi lishma, I think, before Pesach. We talked about schar aveira and hefsid mitzvah. Sometimes there's going to be something good in a negative thing. There's going to be something negative in a good thing. Things have their complexity. They have their multiple aspects. And machlokes is often formed not necessarily from mistakes, but from focusing in on this aspect versus that aspect. If you would have, for instance, the sages of the Sanhedrin who would come up with 48 ways or 49 ways to be metairis hasheretz, to show that a sheretz was kosher, right? It's not that they were just being ridiculous or crazy. They were focusing in on the aspects which were there. They weren't the prevailing aspects. A sheretz is tamei. The Torah says a sheretz is tamei. But there are aspects even within that tumah that can exist as tara. The Maharal posits that the argument of Shammai and Hillel, on which it says Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim, that which stood as sort of the balanced argument until the heavenly voice came out, was because their argument was in fact about something where the perspectives were balanced. It was as close as it could be. The aspects of Osir and the aspects of Mutar, the aspects of the forbidden and the permitted within this, were very, very close to each other. And so the dual perspectives were almost even perspectives. It was almost a machlokes that would have difficulty being reconciled. And on that, we have this dramatic Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chay. So we talked last week, the Maharal discussed last week, so why do we end up ruling like Beis Hillel? We know that there has to be a ruling, as we discussed last week, there has to be a single halacha. But why should the halacha be like Beis Hillel? And we saw that it was his anava, his yashrus, his simplicity, his pashrus. And we spoke about why that was a tool. It wasn't his brilliance necessarily, but it was that anava, which is, again, the melding of knowledge and character. And we discussed it at length. But now, the Maharal has his closing statement on this issue. And I'm going to read to you, it's not long, I'm going to read to you much of it. V'yesh l'chol adas, you need to know. It was specifically for this argument that the heavenly voice came out and declared, these and those are the words of the living God. Because they were the originators, so to speak, of an argument in Torah. Before this argument, there was no argument. When Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel came along, That's when you had their argument. Atshe divrei shneim divrei aleikim chayim. Such that both of them would have the words of the living God, kemo sheyisbar lamala. Vein roi sheyavo Yisrael mimadrega halyona sheloi hoisa b'machlokes b'tayra. It would not have been appropriate that the Jewish people should come from a situation where there was no argument in Torah to El Madrega Zoysha Yibah Machlaikis, to this level, which is not as great, where there is argument, the Echamihem Dvorav B'Telem, when the argument is going to be a slam dunk, when the argument is going to be such that one perspective is so much stronger, one of them is trying to be Metaris Asheretz, the other one is saying, no, Asheretz is Tameh, where it would be so weighted in one direction, where the two opinions would not have balance, that wouldn't be a good way to start. A good place to start with machlokas is where there's genuine doubt, where there's genuine reason for machlokas. Lokachayu machlokas elu velu divrei aleikim chayim. V'achar kach mischadashan machlokas. And then it went from there to other arguments, to other differences of opinion, which weren't nearly as balanced. This is what the Maharal. This is what the Maharal says, that it was good for the original machlokas to be a machlokas that indeed, objectively speaking, almost needed to be a machlokas. And that's pretty much how he ends this section. So I'd like to look at this a little bit with you to try to understand it. Rav Yitzchak Kuttner, who was the head of the yeshiva, the Rosh Yeshiva of Chaim Berlin, and who perhaps is the person most responsible for the fact that we are learning a shir in the Maharal today, because Rav Kuttner very much brought into the world of serious, you know, yeshiva study, this kind of the study of the Maharal's machshava, the study of the Maharal's thought, and really helped. Really was a critical personality in bringing it in. Rav Dessler also, but in many ways to a lesser degree, but Rav Huttner was the one who was most responsible. So Rav Huttner, amongst the other volumes which are published of his essays, is a volume called the Igrei Suksavim, the letters. It's a collection of letters of Rav Huttner, which include both letters from his youth, which are almost, you know, diary entry type of letters, which are very, very fascinating, to letters which he wrote in response to queries, to letters which he wrote, you know, endorsement letters and support letters. It's a very, very interesting volume. But one of them is a letter which he is writing to somebody who asked him specifically about this Maharal. Hadvorim, actually, it's part of a series of questions that this question is actually posed by Rav Huttner himself. He says, Hadvorim temuim, k'alei ba'isai mishna de chagiga ha-mefareshes es ha-machloikes ha-rishayna shal shamei ve-hilal isa lehedya ki machloikes u'atzma nechlik u'gam ha-kaidin. He has a problem with the Maharal statement that the machloikes of Shamei and Hillel was the first machloikes. Was the first argument. Why? Because listen to this Mishnah in Meseches Chagiga. Yosi ben Yoezer Omer Shalom Lismoch. Yosef ben Yochanan Omer Lismoch. There was a difference of opinion between Yosi ben Yoezer and Yosef ben Yochanan. Anybody know those, right? We're familiar with those names? Where are they found? In Pirkei Avos. They were one of the Zugais. They were one of the pairs and who received the tradition down from the chain of transmission, which is described in Pirkei Avos. Okay. Antignus Yisocho kibel mishimen atzadik. Yosi ben Yoezer Yisredev Yosi ben Yochanan Yishushalayim kibel mehem. Yosi ben Yoezer and Yosi ben Yochanan received the tradition from Antignus Yisocho as a pair. And we have two Mishnayos, each one giving their teaching. Yoshua ben Prachya and Itai Harabeli received it from the two of them. Yehuda ben Tabai and Shimon ben Shetach received it as a pair from the two of them. Shemaiah and Avtalion received it from the two of them. Hillel and Shammai received it from the two of them. Says the Mishnah, Yossi ben Yoezer said that you shouldn't do smicha. What does that mean? On Yontiv, if a person wants to bring a karban, so he said that it would not be appropriate for a person to do smicha on the karban on Yontiv. And Yossi ben Yoezer said that you should. They had a difference of opinion. Yoshua ben Prachya said don't. Nitai Arbeli said you should. Yehuda ben Tabai said you shouldn't. Shimon ben Shetach said you should. Shmaya said you should. And Avtalion said you shouldn't. Then there was Hillel and... Hillel and Menachem. Anybody ever hear of Menachem?
No.
Menachem?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, we had him in the Dafyomi.
Right. So Menachem was the original partner of Hillel. And Hillel and Menachem didn't have an argument. So they said, forget it. If you're not arguing, you don't belong here. So Menachem left, and Shammai took his place. And Shammai said, don't do smicha, and Hillel said, do smicha. That was it. And the Gemara, the Mishnah then closes and says, Harishonim hayu nesiim ushniim lahem av bezdin. The first one mentioned in the group, in the pair, was always the Nasi, the ultimate leader of the Sanhedrin, and the second one was the av bezdin, who was the, you know, whatever, the associate chief justice, was the av bezdin who was below him. Those were all of these pairs, and this is the way it works. And the Gemara goes on and speaks about this. That switched around which ones took the position. You may have noticed when reading the Mishnah, they had the Nesiim and the Avbezdin, and they were having the arguments about this position. What happened to Menachem? The Gemara has a discussion. What happened with him? Menachem got drafted. Menachem left the fold. Whatever it is, different interpretations, and it comes in. Says the Gemara, Loilam teishvus al teishvus kala b'yeinecha, a shvus, a rabbinic command, such as prohibition, such as using a behema, using an animal, should not be considered light in your eyes. Because the prohibition of doing it on Yontiv, using the animal this way, is only a prohibition, a rabbinic prohibition. And nevertheless, this became the subject matter of the greatest leaders of the Sanhedrin, their debate, and so on. That's what the Gemara discusses. So what do you have here? Rav Huttner's question is that Hillel and Shammai are not having the first argument. Hillel and Shammai's argument is a continuation of an argument which existed generations before. So what kind of a statement is that? That Hillel and Shammai were the first ones to have this argument, to have an argument in the Jewish people. It's not accurate. That's the question which Rav Huttner deals with. Good question.
Isn't there a difference with the argument of the previous two? There was a ruling as to who was what they would do, whether Lishmuk or not Lishmuk, that everybody followed. But by Hillel and Shammai, didn't Beis Hillel follow one way, and Beis Shammai followed a different way? That was the divisiveness there.
Okay. So it's not clear that there was ever a decision about what should be going on. It's not clear that there was a decision. Tosfos over here.
That didn't have to be a decision to bring Karbanis. They didn't bring him on Yom Tov.
Well, it just describes a machlokes, a standing machlokes. Look, Tosfos over here brings as follows. B'Yerushalmi Amar Barishayna Loi Haya Machlokes Ela Lasmicha Bilvad. Originally, the only machlokes was about smicha. V'Amdu Shammai V'Hillel V'Asu. And Shammai and Hillel came and made additional machlokes. Misha rabu talmidei shamai vehilo shalishim shu kol tzarkan rabu machlokes in Israel v'nechlechu lebeis kitos. Then there were many students who did not serve for as long as they needed to. They did not learn by their rebbeim. They did not apprentice, so to speak, for as long as they needed to. And then it became wild machlokes, and there became divided into multiple opinions. Taisvis asks from Machlaikis, which you have by Shol Beis Dinai, that dates back to the time of the Melech Shol, and he reconciles it. The Taisvis also wants to probe what were the additional Machlaikis which happened in the days of Shammai and Hillel that the Yerushalmi refers to. But the Rav Hudner writes as follows, and he says, Hatshuva al zeh is as follows, that until Shnei Chachamim, Shnei Batadim, Shnechleku, Shaloi Bizman HaSanhedrin, Ayat Shaloi Hayu HaDavar Boru Lohen. He speaks about what would be the din, the Rambam speaks about what would be the din if you had two sages who had a difference of opinion, and it was either not in the time of the Sanhedrin, where there could not be, since there was no Sanhedrin, there could not be a central address where you could have the argument reconciled. Or, alternatively, before the Sanhedrin had a chance to deal with it. So says Rav Hutner, what do you see? That there are two different situations. One situation is one where the argument is not reconcilable. You don't have the facility in place. Two, bring it to conclusion, because there's no Sanhedrin, there's no central body. And the other one is, where there is that central body, it just never made it there. So he makes essentially the distinction, as Rani pointed out, that in the one case, you don't have the ability to reconcile. When the Maharal speaks of the argument of Shammai and Hillel as the first argument, of course it's not the first argument. Even Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi ben Yochanan wasn't the first argument. Of course people argued about issues in Torah. However, there was always the mechanism of getting it done, getting it resolved. Now, it seems that the machlokas between Yossi ben Ezer and Yossi ben Yochanan, and in all these generations, it didn't get resolved. But not because the facility wasn't in place, but because there was these two leaders of the Sanhedrin who were, each one was taking an opposite side in this discussion, and therefore there was no Nimnu v'Gamru. They didn't come to a decision. But the time you got down to Hillel and Shammai, it wasn't even possible anymore. By the time you got down to that generation, or at least to the students of Hillel and Shammai, there the possibility was already lost. That's what Rav Hutner puts forward to explain the difference. There's a Mishnah in Maseches Sota. In the end of Maseches Sota, the Mishnayos speak about different things which stopped, which ended at different times, which we lost. Mishameis Yossi ben Yoezer Istreda, the Yossi ben Yehuda, it says in the text, but they change it to Yossi ben Yochanan, Ish Yerushalayim. When these two died, the first pair, Batlu ha-eshkailis. We lost the eshkailis. What are eshkailis? Literally, eshkailis are clusters. We lost the clusters. Like a cluster of grapes, remember from the Chumash, from the story of the spies, was called an eshkol. Right? A cluster. What does that mean, that they lost the clusters? Says Rashi. Right? The Gemara is going to say, Ish shahakolboy. What's an eshkailis? Eshkailis is ish shahakolboy. Amar Rav Yehuda Mar Shmuel, ish shahakolboy. A person who had everything within him. Rashi in the Gemara translates, what does that mean, he had everything in him? Torah ba'amita. True Torah. A true grasp on Torah. Ve'in dofi, v'shichacha v'machlokas. There's no falsehood, there's nothing forgotten, there's no dispute. Clear Torah. That's what is lost with these two. Rashi in the Mishnah, commenting on this, is a little bit more elaborate. Rashi says, "Beforesh b'Gemara shakol b'hen." In the Gemara explains, "Eshkolos" means They had everything in them. Of course, right? Eshkol is that word itself, the cluster, right? You have all the grapes bunched together as one. So here it's all the qualities bunched together as one. Ad yemein lehoya machlokes b'chachmei Yisrael, says Rashi. Until their day, there was no argument amongst the sages of the Jewish people. Kulon hayu aimim dvarim kinesinasan l'maisha misinai. They conveyed the words as they were given over to Moshe Rabbeinu at Sinai. Veheina rishonim shenechleku. They were the first ones who argued, b'smichas korbanais b'yamtiv, when it came to whether you were able to do the smicha and the offerings on Yantiv, kiramina b'chagiga. Hu hoya machloikes rishon shehoya b'Yisrael b'divrei Torah. That was the first argument which existed in the Jewish people in words of Torah. That's the issue of Eshkolis. Now, there was never an argument before. There was never a difference of opinion before. Everything was as it was given to Moshe Rabbeinu at Sinai. It's impossible, because there were many things that were part of the teachings of part of the learning of Torah that were extrapolation from the teachings of Moshe Rabbeinu at Sinai. Of course, there are many teachings that are specific, handed over generation to generation, specific halachas from Moshe Rabbeinu to Sinai. But isn't there other Torah? If they came up like we would come up, right, with a microwave, or like we talked the previous time about who is a Jew in the question of a in vitro fertilization from a donor or something like that. Well, who's the parent? Is the parent this? Is the parent that? There's halacha l'maisha misinai about that, or you have to go and derive and extrapolate to abstract the principles from the halacha l'maisha misinai, which you know, and there could be debate, there could be argument about such things. Right, the issue of whether mayavi v'loy mayaviya, right? So there was a significant difference of opinion, and till it was accepted, and so on and so forth, right? Now there, it's even trickier, because that would seem to be already possible to be a reading in the Torah, and the response was with a Kabbalah, kach kibalti mi beis dinai shel Shmuel haramasi. However, the even without pointing to specific isolated incidents, there would have to be discussion, there would have to be debate. There was a process of a Sanhedrin making a decision, right, where they would argue about things, where they would go back and forth and bring proofs. What could be described here by Rashi, what seems to be described here by Rashi, is that a new part of Machlokes began. The tradition's strength does not preclude differences of opinion in new issues, but it does preclude differences of opinion about old issues. The Torah would remain clear and perfect. However, application still requires creative analysis, which is subject to machlokes. However, when we were getting down to this point in time, we started to see cracks in the tradition as well. We started to see that the Kabbalah was not as strong as Rashi says. They were all set over like they were given. They were the first ones that argued. Where there was something of a weakening of the Kabbalah, a weakening of the tradition. This in itself is not simple. Right, there's a Rambam who writes in both in the Mishnah Torah and in his introduction to the Pirush HaMishnayis about halacha islamaisha misinai, that you won't find machlekes about them, you won't find argument about them. It's a very, very Rambam which also has to face lots of questions. We're not going to go into all of the details, but the only thing that we need to abstract here, which I think is relevant and is somewhat obvious, is that we have two different realms which we can talk about. We can talk about a weakening of the tradition, and we can talk about, even where everybody knows exactly what the tradition is, there could still be room for argument and for debate. The Mishnah over here is noting, this Mishnah in Sota is what seemed to be a partner with the Mishnah in Chagiga, a pair with the Mishnah in Chagiga. The Mishnah in Chagiga says that there was an argument which started with Yossi ben Yoezer. The Mishnah here in Sota says that when these people died, then the Eshkolos were finished. The generation Right? The difference of opinion would seem to go together with what went down with them. That somehow that was the beginning of the kinds of cracks in Torah that would lead to more and more machlokas. That's what happened with them.
Why should it be when they died? Why wouldn't it be when
Good question, and I don't know the answer to the question. The question would be, so it would be by the, when the generation before them died, when Antignus Ishsocho died. Right? I don't really know the answer to the question. I suspect that the idea is because usually when you have them, the ones who are sitting on the border, right, so, you know, they were still the Talmidim of Antignus Ishsocho. They were still somewhat connected to that, but they were the segue, they were the ones who led into the future, so therefore they were still considered to be the people of Eshkoilis. But they were the first Machlokes. Until their day, there was, you know, there was the, they were the first Machlokes in this variety. Now, the Machlokes about Smicha would presumably not be a Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai argument, because it's a Drabonon, because it's a rabbinic command. But nevertheless, what we have is symptomatic of the weakness in the understanding of the original Torah is that you're going to end up having more machlokas. Of course there could be arguments, even if you know the Torah well, in application. However, when the Torah is weaker, you understand that argument is going to grow that much more significantly. So let's go back now here to this thing of the Maharal. In the days of Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi ben Yochanan, we find machlokas starting well before the arguments between Hillel and Shammai. The heavenly voice came out in the days of Hillel and Shammai. So the first thing to note is that it is not a coincidence that Machlokas started when the Zugos started, when the pairs started. Antignos Ishsocho was the generation before them. We describe the tradition as sitting with one person. When we get to the next generation, we describe the tradition as sitting by two people, by a pair. And this continues all the way down, right, to Hillel and Shammai. At a certain point, right after Hillel and Shammai, we don't really describe it in terms of the Zugos, because we're already dealing there with a Sanhedrin in exile, where there really isn't going to be the same kind of a body. The generation of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, where things were already that much more weak. You didn't have the structure of the Nasi and Avbezni. By Yochanan ben Zakkai, you did have it. You had Yochanan ben Zakkai and Rabban Gamliel, the son of Hillel, right? They were the partners, and Yochanan ben Zakkai already had five students, right? The Mishnah says in yesterday's Perek and Pirkei Avos. But the idea is that there was already a certain duality. There was already some kind of a lack of perfect clarity. The Zugos, the pairs, while each one had a function, but there was, to a degree, there was Yossi ben Yoezer's camp and Yossi ben Yochanan's camp. And there became already the beginnings of division within the Jewish people, together with the issue of Machlokas. That became worse and worse. That was exacerbated to the point of the students of Hillel and Shammai. Well, Hillel and Shammai, first of all, Machlokas expanded beyond the original, instead of one. So there were, as the Yerushalmi says it, there were four subjects about which they argued. And then the students of Hillel and Shammai had numerous subjects about which they argued. And at that point in time already, they weren't able to reconcile. They weren't able to come to differences of opinion. So what am I trying to bring out with all of this? To wade through the history and the various points is very, very difficult. It's very, very difficult. But there are levels in how we ended up with the Torah of division of Machlokas the way we have it. And they are not generally complementary levels. They're not positive things in the first, second, and third glance at them. They are not positive things. The idea that the tradition of Moshe Rabbeinu from Sinai, that people knew it and held on to it so well, had become a little bit weaker, is not a good thing. Right? You would view it together with the need to eventually write down the Torah, because those traditions were becoming so weak. Right? The oral Torah had to be written down because those traditions were becoming weaker. And then, together with that, a couple of generations later, but pretty much together with that weakness in the tradition from Moshe Rabbeinu at Sinai came as well an inability for people to come together to make decisions, to have the Sanhedrin, to be Meshamesh Kol Tzarkan, to serve as much as they need to in order to be able to have it. Now, so the Maral statement here is that it would be appropriate that in the beginning of the Machlokes that it not be in its ultimate form of disintegration. That the original Machlokes, the Machlokes of Shammai and Hillel, should be where indeed very, very accurately you could see a disagreement. You could see two somewhat equal sides. That's a way that the Machlokes begins. That at least if you're working with Svara, with logic, you're dealing with very, very strong logic, with something which indeed has ambiguity with it. And that's a statement, and it's a nice, clean, classic statement that the move from a unified Torah to a broken up Torah, to arguments, comes in stages. And the first stage is one where the break is a little bit of a cleaner break, and then it gets a little bit more jagged. But I want, in the light of what we've been talking about, of this whole notion of machlokes, you know, within Torah, to try just to put together these pieces of how we see machlokes developed, and so that we can try through that to understand a little bit better the strength of Torah Achas and the what machlokes and this difference opinion is a manifestation of. When the Gemara explains the difficulty of having a Sanhedrin, of having a Supreme Court, it was by saying that Misharabu Talmidei Hillel v'Shammai Shalai Shimshu Kol Tzarkon. When we had a lot of students of Hillel and Shammai who did not serve for as long as they needed to. Who did not serve. What does that mean, they did not serve? Shimshu. You know, the Gemara says, Godol Shimusho Yoser Milimudo. It speaks about two ways of studying from a Rebbe. We mentioned this passage in the Gemara, I think, way back in the beginning. More than the specific information which you have from the teacher is shimusho, is serving them. What is meant by serving them? Two interpretations. One is, way Rashi says, is Gemara. More than the specific information is the analysis that you get from the Rebbe. That's the way Rashi understands it. Others understand it. Shimusho is literally being around the person, serving them, helping them out. Because then you learn from how Torah has been ingested by the person, how Torah has become a part of the person's personality. In either case, the idea is a level of deference beyond. Shimush, a meshamesh, is certainly somebody who's showing deference. Whether he's showing deference by serving him, by taking care of him, whether he's showing deference by sitting and looking and trying to hear what the person analyzed, what they got one from the other. Now, what is this a manifestation of? Remember, who was the person who was the first student of Torah from a teacher?
Yahushua.
What was Yahushua's sterling characteristic that made him be the one to be able to do it? Yeshua ben Nun, nar lo yomush mitaycha ayel. He was like a nar, he was like a young lad who did not leave the tent. He was always around Moshe Rabbeinu. He was always there whenever Moshe Rabbeinu taught. He would be there, and the Chazal describe that Yeshua ben Nun would also be the one who would arrange the benches, clean things up in the Beis Medrash. In other words, it wasn't just that he was there to listen and he wasn't there to serve, he was also there to serve. When Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Har Sinai and Yehoshua couldn't go, where was Yehoshua? He was waiting, as close as could be waited, in order to be able to get it. It's a remarkable thing if you think about it. Moshe Rabbeinu had to appoint leaders in his absence. Who did he appoint? Aaron and Hur, not Yehoshua. Yehoshua wasn't appointed the leader in his absence, because Yehoshua, as long as Moshe Rabbeinu was alive, was still completely functioning as Yehoshua. His Rebbe was there. He wasn't going to give up a moment of Shimush, which was what qualified him in the most outstanding way to be the successor of Moshe Rabbeinu. And what did it demonstrate? It demonstrated a remarkable deference and a remarkable humility. So he learned completely. Yehoshua only had one problem in terms of his tradition. And what was that? The Gemara says in Temura that when Moshe Rabbeinu was about to die, so he came to Yehoshua, or he was with Yehoshua, and he said, Yehoshua, tell me, you have any questions? And Yehoshua said to him, Rebbe, why should I have any questions? I was always here every time you taught. Every word of Torah that you conveyed, I was there for. So I know everything that you know that there is that you would need to teach. And the Gemara says that that was Yehoshua out of character. Because while in truth Yehoshua was there all the time, and in that way he was deferential, but that was not a deferential response. That was an assertive response. And there was a crack in Yehoshua's deference. And as a result of that, what happened?
He forgot
3,000 halachas. And what was needed was not the tradition, but you needed instead Othniel ben Kenaz to go and to say, okay, but let me regenerate those halachos by looking at this and looking at that. We can extrapolate and we can figure it out. But the tradition was lost by the lack of deference. But Yehoshua otherwise was an outstandingly deferential person. That's why it says Yehoshua went, he was one of the Meraglim, he was one of the spies, and Moshe Rabbeinu had to add a letter to his name. Why? He was called Hoshea and he changed his name to Yehoshua. Yud is the letter of independence, of strength. That's what you see in the Midrashim. Why? Because Moshe Rabbeinu was worried, Koyoshiacha me'atzas Meraglim. Hashem should save you from the plan of the Meraglim. You're going there with 10 people, right? So what's the idea? You're going to be influenced by them. Why was he worried about that? Because Yeshua's whole posture in life was to be influenced. Zekeinim Sheba'ose Adar Amru, the elders who saw Moshe and saw Yeshua, they said Moshe Rabbeinu's face was like the sun. Yeshua's was like the moon, says the Marsha. Why? Because the moon is just reflecting the light of somebody else, of the sun. That's the ultimate humility, the ultimate deference. That was Yeshua's entire posture. So as Moshe Rabbeinu said, this is a situation where he can't be deferential. Right? He's going to have to stand up to 10 leaders of the Jewish people. So he gave a yud to his name. He didn't have to do that for Kalev. Why? Kalev was the father of whom? Of Othniel. Right? Othniel ben Kenaz was the son of Kalev ben Yefuna Aknizi. Kalev was a person of initiative, like his son Othniel ben Kenaz, who was not a bor sid she'eno ma'abed tipa. He was a mayan amisgaber. He wasn't one who received, he was one who generated. He created the halachas, he recreated the halachas when they couldn't be figured out. But Yeshua was the model of deference, and Yeshua therefore preserved the tradition. And he needed to have strength where that was needed, because that way he wouldn't just be a character of deference to whatever. Right? But it was humility properly placed. The failure of the Jewish people was when Leishimshu Kol Tzarka, when they were not sufficiently deferential. That's what came, that's how the breakdown in the Jewish people's, in the tradition came. Yossi ben Yoezer, Yossi, right, there was always one, and everybody received from the one. The idea that it gets split is already a beginning of a crack in the deference. And you understand now, Hillel and Shammai, even as they argue, but who are we going to rule like? What did we learn in the Gemara in Erevin? What did we discuss last week? Hillel, because he was deferential. And the key to tradition is deference. I want to tell you a vort. Maybe some of you heard it from me before, because it's an outstanding vort. It's an outstanding thought. And it's very, very tied into this. It has to do with this whole tkufa. It paints what's happening here in the context of an era. And this is a change, which is an epoch, what do you say, an epochal change, or whatever you would say to it. It's a change. Anybody know what I'm talking about? A sea change, right? But it's coming from a change in an era, in a change in a whole period. Everybody knows the story when the sages were looking for a stone to replace the lost stone from the Choshen, from the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol, and they went to this non-Jew named Dama ben Asina, and he had it, but the problem was that the key to the storehouse was under his father's pillow, and his father was taking a nap, right? So he said, "I'm sorry, I can't help you because my father's taking a nap. I can't get it." So they had to go to someplace else. Don't ask me how long the nap was, that they couldn't wait. But whatever it was, they couldn't wait, and they went on to the next person, and he lost the business. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him reward. That 1 year later, what was born to him? A paraduma, a red heifer, which is a commodity that he knew that no matter what money in the world he asked, they would give him, because they needed it. They couldn't do without it. And therefore, he got that reward, and the Gemara says, he said, "I know I could ask you whatever I want, but all I'm asking you is to just pay me the money that I lost last year by not selling you the stone from the Eifel." That's a famous story in the Gemara. What stone was lost from the Eifel? So in the Talmud Yerushalmi, it says the following. This is really worth remembering. In the Talmud Yerushalmi, it says, Avda Yoshpe mi Binyamin. The stone that was lost was the Yoshpe stone. The Yoshpe stone, I don't know what it is in English. The Torah lists the various stones that were for the various tribes in the breastplate. The stone of Binyamin was lost. That was what was missing. Okay. So what's the significance of that? What's the meaning of that?
So, the only one who didn't bow down to Esau.
Binyamin is the only one who didn't bow down to Esau, but Binyamin is also the only one of something else. Binyamin didn't sell his brother. The Gemara says, Chazal say, that one of the reasons why the Beis HaMikdash was in the Chelek of Binyamin was because he didn't bow down to Esau, being safe of Shochein. Another reason was because he was the only one that wasn't involved in this. Yosef was also involved. The brothers and Yosef all were involved in the dispute which led to the sale of Yosef. They were all major, major violators of Kibud Av Ve'Em, or Kibud Av. They sold Yosef, who was their father's favorite. They sent their father into a 22-year strong and deep depression. It's a terrible, terrible break in Kibud Av. And Yosef, even though he was quote-unquote the victim, but we know that to some degree, perhaps, he made some judgment mistakes along the way that helped bring it on. And, as well, we see that Chazal say about Yosef. Yosef was 22 years and he wasn't able to honor his father, right? That was a significant piece for him as well. The only one who didn't have an infraction in Kibud Av was Binyamin. So the Meshe Chachma of Meir Simcha explains as follows. What was happening in the time of the Second Temple that these people were dealing with? When was the stone of Binyamin lost? What was the single greatest deterioration which was happening in the time of the Second Temple? If you were just at this shir, you would say, what happened was the tradition weakened, arguments began in the Jewish people. But yes, that's true, but it came together with another great manifestation of the weakening of tradition, much worse than this one, and that was the Tzedukim, the Sadducees, who did not believe in the tradition of the Torah Shebaal Peh. They did not accept the oral tradition. They didn't believe what they didn't see themselves. They didn't believe in Olam Haba, and they didn't believe in the Torah Shebaal Peh, and the oral tradition, which was not written down, which was not given over, in the written form. That's also a breakdown in tradition that was simultaneous with the breakdown in tradition within our own, within those who remained faithful, there was also a weakening of the tradition. Misha Meis Yosi ben Eliezer. Interestingly, who was the last person who was a single individual source for Torah?
Antignus
Yisocho. What is Antignus Yisocho claim to infamy? His two students were Tzadok Ubaitus, the leader of the Tzedukim, of the Sadducees and the Bethusians, the two groups that broke off with tradition were because they misunderstood his teaching. He taught, don't be like students who serve the master in order to get reward, but serve, be like students who serve the master knowing that they won't get reward. Right? They misunderstood. Instead of understanding as serve not thinking that you're going to get reward, in other words, maybe you'll get reward, you know, save our covered love, but that's not why you're doing it. They heard it as that there will be no reward. You should rest assured there will be no reward. And they said, if there's no reward, you know, we're out of here. And that, as the Rambam describes, so they had a choice. They could have said, forget the whole Torah. But they knew that that would be a very hard thing to sell, because the Jewish people were sort of used to it. So therefore they said, you know what, we'll get rid of the oral Torah. And they knew, once you get rid of the oral Torah, with the written Torah you can do what you want, the Rambam writes. So you might as well have gotten rid of the whole thing. But this way, they kept up appearances that they were sticking with the Torah. But they did with it what they wanted, right? You can make this, what it says in the Torah is an abomination. You can make mutter, right, if you take away the Torah Shebaal Peh. You can twist it and turn it, it can be whatever you want it to be. So that was what they decided to do. But you understand that, however it is, and it's worth probing and discussing, we're not going to do it now, why that specific teaching would come, we could understand how it would prove that mistake, but simultaneously, the next generation was a generation of breakdown of tradition, not just the ones who broke away cold turkey from the tradition, but even the students who stayed faithful, even Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi ben Yochanan, is already the signal of the beginning of a less strong tradition. Says the Meshech Chachma, what is the one mitzvah in the Torah that manifests most clearly the deference to tradition, to a tradition, a Masorah, which is given over one generation to the next? Is Kibud Av V'Em, honoring your father and your mother. Torah classically is given over parent to child, generation to generation. Says the Meshech Chachma, this came with a breakdown in Kibud Av V'Em. And so the stone of Binyamin, the final stone on the ephod, the stone which was emblematic of this fidelity to tradition, as tradition was disintegrating, it fell out of the breastplate. And where did they find it? By Dama ben Asina, who was the practitioner of Kibud Av V'Em par excellence. Unbelievable. Right? That was the stone which was missing. That was the piece which was missing from Klal Yisrael. This was the breakdown of the era. There wasn't enough Yehoshua bin Nun here. The students of Shammai and Hillel, when we see it in the ultimate, things don't happen in a flash. They disintegrate slowly. First, you still have the Sanhedrin, but the Sanhedrin is not as unified as it was before. Most decisions are able to come to conclusion, but you know, there remain perhaps still some outstanding machlokas. But then it disintegrates further. And the students of Hillel and Shammai just didn't spend enough time studying from their Rebbe. They learned a little bit, and then they went and they hung out their own shingles. They wanted to do their own thing. They didn't understand the importance of deference to a teacher. They didn't understand the importance of deference to a consensus. And that was the breakdown of tradition within the Jewish people. Machlokes can be very legitimate. Can be machlokes l'shem shamayim. But most often, what is machlokes? Machlokes, argument usually has in it an ingredient which is not for the sake of heaven. And what's that?
Gaiva.
That's the argument of Korach v'Adoso. The opposite of Shammai and Hillel is the argument of Korach. What was Korach's beef? Why are you ahead of me? Moshe Rabbein, I don't understand. We're all prophets. You're all prophets. You heard the Ten Commandments. Moshe Rabbeinu stayed up there for 40 days and 40 nights. Maybe he has something to teach you that you don't know yet. No. We know it already. It's unbelievable. And it's reality. The notion to be absolutely deferential, like Yehoshua. Even Yehoshua, again, I taught you everything, you heard everything that I taught. Maybe there's something that I learned up there on Har Sinai in those 40 days and 40 nights with God that I didn't share with you. Maybe I know something that you don't know. Even in Yehoshua there was a crack. But you understand that this is deference. That's, you have the numerous Mishnayos and Pirkei Avos would speak about this. Imein Yira in Chachma. Right? Yira Shamayim, humility. Because you can't learn Torah without deference. You can spout Torah without deference. But you can't learn Torah without deference. And before we spout, we've got to learn. So Hillel and Shammai, right, themselves, you had Hillel there, who we rule like because of his deference, but he's also over a generation that's not so much, its strength is not going to be in deference. Now I want to just, close perhaps with a positive note that, deference is critical. But in a certain way, and this is always the way the Sfarim view the way these developments, these negative developments in history, as also perhaps having a silver lining. And there's a notion that comes along here with the lack of deference and the difficulties in the Masorah that it leaves more room for a little bit more of the Osniel ben Kenaz, which is, we don't remember what we were taught, so now we have to dig inside ourselves and be able to find the Torah that comes from us. We have to go from the deference to the Mayan HaMisgaber, to the fountain, to the wellspring of Torah. And that has its own value. It's not the great Kibbutz Av Va'Em thing, right? It's not the great deference thing, but it has a certain positive value. Ruach HaKodesh Asher B'Kirbo, right? The idea of the wise man overtaking the prophet. There's no prophecy anymore because there's no receiving. There's no deference. Also in the same era. And instead, the wise person, who as the Ramban says, who has an understanding within, will teach you and will be able to tell you. Because in the absence of tradition, you need something that will generate from the person. And the people become that much more important. They loom much larger. There's much to talk about with this. But we don't have the time or is this necessarily the time to go into all of it? But I would just point it out to you in the spirit of Pirkei Avos, this one thing. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai was the student of Hillel and Shammai, right? He was the greatest student of Hillel and Shammai. Kibul Mehem. On him it says he received the tradition. So of all the students of Hillel and Shammai who weren't so deferential, you have Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai as being very deferential. Whether he was the greatest or not of the students of Hillel and Shammai, the Gemara discusses. Maybe he was not the greatest, but he was the one who's described as being the most deferential of receiving the tradition. But all around him is a lack of receipt of tradition. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had 5 students. What did he do to those 5 students? What does the Mishnah say in Pirkei Avos? Two things. First thing was Hayomayne Shvachan. He went and he spoke about the qualities of each one of the students. This one has a quality like this. This one has great memory. This one has a great wellspring. This. And then what did he do? He said to them, I want you guys to go out and observe for yourself and comment on what the good way is for a person to choose. Go out and see what the bad way is for a person to avoid. What's he doing? He's saying, I want to hear what you have to say. That's a first. He's telling them their qualities, their powers, quote unquote, and he's saying, I want to hear what you have to say. That's not the usual, the Rebbe Talmud, the way we would imagine is the Rebbe is teaching the Talmud. Here he's telling the Talmud, I want you to go out and I want you to observe, not from what you heard from me, I want to hear what you have to say. What's going on?
It's a transition.
accepting the shift.
Hmm?
Accepting the shift.
Accepting the shift and capitalizing on the shift. In other words, turning the negative to a certain degree into a positive. Trying to say, look, if you're not going to be deferential, let's work together on bringing out what you will be able to bring to the table, what you are going to be able to add. There are many additional illustrations of this, but this perhaps would be a good example, you know, within the contrast of Kiblu Me'em, because there's no more Kiblu Me'em in Pirkei Avos. There's no more tradition that's described. This is the end. From the tradition, from receiving the tradition, to stimulating the next generation to create.
I assume in today's generation, where everything is all mixed up, that we need to be doing both.
Yes, and in that time they also needed to do both. You need to do both. You have to have a very strong deferential absorption of tradition, for sure.
When you're talking about the Yashba, you're talking about the Choshen, correct?
Choshen, yeah. Avnei Choshen.
Because you were saying
Eifel. Eifel, right. Okay. Not the shoulder parts. Yeah. Okay. Yitz Hashem, next week we will do this last section, which is not about machlokas, not about arguments, about a different aspect of Chachamim making the 40 lashes, which the Torah says, into 39 lashes. How does that work? And, okay. Good morning.
No.
Hmm?
I can't have a person just going.